This episode of the Future is Female podcast is a special one. In honour of Equal Pay Day, we caught up with Lily Ledbetter, the woman whose activism and tenacity changed the fates of millions of American women.
Hear how she took her case for equal pay to court and fought a decade-long battle, resulting in President Obama signing the Lily Ledbetter Fair Pay Act in 2009. Lily is joined by Kate Kelly, who is spearheading the Lily Social Action Campaign, so they can tell us what this historic work means for women today. Lily and Kate, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you join us for what will be a very exciting conversation as we celebrate Women's History Month.
We're grateful to be here.
Let's get started the way we start pretty much all of our episodes. Can each of you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Thank you. I got here simply, and I'm still out front fighting for equal pay because I learned after having a total of 35-year working career and the last 20 years with a major corporation, I was being shortchanged and not paid exactly what my male counterparts was getting paid. And that was devastating to me because that was not only my take-home pay for me and my family, but it was my retirements, my 401ks, my Social Security today. I was shortchanged all the way through. And after I learned that and found out how I had been mistreated and shortchanged, I couldn't let it go. So I filed a charge with an Equal Employment Opportunities Commission, and we finally got a lawyer, got to trial in 2003, went to the Supreme Court in 2006, and five justices ruled against me. They said I should have filed on the first paycheck I got that was shortchanged, even though I didn't know it, and even though I did not have a way to prove it. When I learned that I had been so shortchanged, I had to stand up for me and my family because that was not the law. And that's not the way it should have been.
My name's Kate Kelly. If you think that Lily's story is a remarkable one, it is. And I'm very happy to be part of the producing team of an incredible group of women who are determined to get Lily's story on the big screen through a feature film starring Patricia Clarkson titled Lily, premiering in 2024. We also understood that this film is going to start a cultural conversation about how women are treated in the workplace. And we wanted to meet that conversation head on with a proactive social impact campaign that will galvanize for-profit institutions, nonprofit institutions, and individuals to collectively come together and say, enough. We want to shine a spotlight on the nonprofits that are doing the good work. And we also want to create a world where Lily's story will never be repeated again.
One of the things I think is really interesting about your story, Lily, is you took it to the highest courts in the land. But tell us a little bit about the start. Did you start out thinking, I'm going to fight this for all women? Or were you thinking more, I've just got to sort out those paychecks. I really want my cash.
I started by thinking that I was standing up for Lily Ledbetter and her family. And I had not really thought about the other people at the time, even though I had to reach out and try to get some women to go to trial and testify on my behalf. And it was extremely hard to go up against a major corporation who had a lot of employees, had good paying jobs, and those women was afraid of losing their jobs. So it was hard and very difficult because there were so few women in different jobs. But I started out thinking that it was my fight and I would get help along the way. But when that verdict came out in May of 07, it was no longer about Lily Ledbetter. Then it was about my daughter, my grandson's wives, my daughter-in-law's. It was about every woman across the nation. And the verdict came out and Justice Ginsburg read her dissent. And that was the key that started the nation. There was a big cry from coast to coast, north to south. We cannot let this verdict stand, because that verdict standing like it did in the Ledbetter v. Goodyear case actually closed courtroom doors. It closed them to other people who had cases and needed to file, but they no longer could. Based on that 180-day technicality, the way those five justices ruled in that verdict. So Justice Ginsburg challenged Congress. She said, the ball is in your court. You take it and change this grave injustice back, because she said, this is not right. And these justices do not understand or do not care. So the committee in Washington in the House started working on it. And we were in the Congress in just the 1st of July talking about the Lilly Ledbetter fair pay bill. And they told me that maybe with that verdict, I could get some of the funds the federal court had allowed me with a verdict, which was $3.8 million. But my lawyers warned me, said, look, don't get your hopes up, because we've never seen a case like this where the money would be retroactive. But for me, it was no longer about the money. It was about the law and what was right. And I heard so many stories. I couldn't let it go. Every woman and minority across this great nation, the men got behind it because they understood. They talked about their children, their wives, their mothers working two jobs to send them to law school. They got behind it. So we had a lot of push across this nation, and I had a lot of upholding to help get the Ledbetter bill passed. And it passed within 18 months, which was a record, and it was supported and co-sponsored by Republicans and Democrats.
We certainly do have a long way to go still, but before we continue with the interview, I just want to take a minute. And Lily, I just want to say thank you for your fight and thank you for everything that you've done for women across the country and for me personally, on behalf of my friends and colleagues and my nieces who are now growing up in this world. Like, we wouldn't be where we are today without pioneers and trailblazers like you. So thank you for everything that you've done. And like you said, we still have a ways to go, but we're able to go and fight that because of women like you. So it's what you've done is amazing.
Well, I feel like my case woke the country up. I live in a college town with a lot of retired male professors, and it got their attention. And then they started talking about their wives and their daughters not getting their rightful pay. So people understood it. And it woke up young college people. So they know when they go out to seek a job, to be sure they negotiate and get the rightful starting pay, because raises are generally percentages of your base pay. So you need to start out and get the rightful pay because it's gone. There's no way to make it up. 2 years back pay is all you can go back. And they only did the lowest paid individual in my department and gave me $30,000 per year. And the rest was the lost wages and overtime and future retirements, because there's nothing in the law that allows a person to gain those lost retirements and benefits that are gone. So it's really bad. A person really needs to be sure that they're educated and trained and know their skills and get the rightful pay.
What an amazing movement and campaign to be a part of. I think it's evident to all of our listeners, you know, the pure passion that is coming out of this campaign and this episode. How did you guys initially link up, and why was it important to you to be a part of this and join Lily as such a trailblazer?
If you asked me 4 years ago if I would have signed up for this journey, I honestly don't know what the answer would be. I was introduced to this film coming during COVID, March 2020. One of the producers reached out. Prior to that, I was working at the Tribeca Film Festival. And really, while working there, my eyes were opened up to just how important storytelling is from every angle. But really, film is one of the most important ways that we can create and build empathy. Really, one of the amazing ways for people to understand what it's like for somebody like Lily to go through what she went through. But that said, you know, producing an independent film during COVID was a lift. So here we are 4 years later. And the reason why I really was brought into the fold was because of my understanding and partnerships, brand partnerships, strategy, but also the social impact space. And so our intention with the Lilly Social Action Campaign is to create a conduit and a collaborative effort to galvanize for-profit institutions, nonprofit institutions, and individuals to collectively come together to talk about what we're doing in the future. And really for us to highlight the platforms, the advocacy groups, the nonprofits that are out there doing the good work for women, and really show us collectively that there are resources, there are tools, there are solutions that are out there. And, you know, one of the big parts of Lilly's story is obviously, as she told you, her challenges. But when she heard the dissent, a woman named Jocelyn Samuels, and I'll have Lilly speak about that relationship, went down and knocked on her door and said, keep going. You got to keep going. And now Jocelyn Samuels was working for the National Women's Law Center at the time. And they were one of the important institutions that stepped in, among many others, to support Lilly's endeavor. And so that storyline you will see in the film. But what a great opportunity for us to support this incredible platform that is out there supporting women, both through the film as well as the campaign. So I'm so incredibly grateful to have had these 4 years to really line up on our strategy, who we're aligning with, and how. And I can't wait to roll this out in partnership with the film. When the film premieres, we will officially launch the campaign. And again, we want to take advantage of the conversations that will come and give people a place to have public discourse, conversations, collaboration opportunities, and really try and make a major effect under the, you know, with the inspiration of our incredible spearhead and leader in Lilly Ledbetter.
Do you think there is enough conversation about this? Obviously, we have Women's History Month, we have International Women's Day, but is there ever enough conversation about this topic even now?
The stats speak for themselves, you know, and I also think that until this problem is not a woman's problem, where we have our women's groups and we're speaking to women about women's issues and men are not getting involved from an allyship perspective, we're not going to make a huge difference. Women need to be in positions of power. If Lilly had women on the inside understanding what she was going through, we're so wonderful that this story happened, but the story wouldn't have happened because women would have said, this is not okay, as Ruth Bader Ginsburg did. So we really need to create a collective conversation about what's happening, but also we need to involve men. They're being affected just as much as we are. And the system that we all work within, it was designed for a workforce that no longer exists. So that is the crux of the problem and how we evaluate how we move forward. But men, you know, because either they feel shunned or not involved or whatever, they need to be welcomed into the fold. And we need to collectively come together to have a conversation about how the future is going to look for the next generation.
Do you think the issues are still the same as they were? Because obviously a lot has happened in the past few years. We've crammed in a lot of history. So with the pandemic, there's been lots of talk about women's roles, both at work and the home, shifting. Are there still the same issues, Lilly, as when you started? Or are there now a new bunch of problems for women to overcome?
They still mainly have the problems of their money, promotions, and getting the top jobs. They still have that. But I will share that once the Ledbetter bill became a law, I mean, just in months, there were women from coast to coast getting huge checks from their employers, from lawyers to medical doctors, teachers, factory workers. The company I worked for said, if you discuss your pay, you cannot keep your job. You will lose it. And no one ever discussed their pay. And when they gave salary checks, raises, they did not post what the percentage of raises would be or how often it would be. They would do them individually. And I never knew if somebody else was getting a raise or they'd already got one. And as I found out during discovery, how little I was making compared to all of those 15 men in that department, it was earth-shaking to find that out, because we worked a lot of overtime, and that overtime was where I had really, really lost my money.
Lilly, did any of those 15 men at the time support you? We just talked about how important male allies are. Did those 15 men support you?
They did, but they wouldn't testify on my behalf. But I did have one of the engineer men came to trial and testified on my behalf. He volunteered. In fact, they never used him. And he ended up, he gave the law firm their travel check back. He was the only one who did. I also had another male African-American who had the same job I had that came to trial, and they never used him either. They used the two women, and that and the 4x5 grease board with all of the people's names and salaries did it for the jury. There were 5 men and 2 women on that federal jury. And that's how they arrived at the amount of money that the jury found in my favor. Although I never got a dime from any source, not one penny, because that's the thing. Once it's gone with the Supreme Court, as you know, it's gone forever.
We talk a lot about male allyship and how important it is just to have allies across the board. And you mentioned this a little, Lily, but what do you think companies and organizations can be doing to prove that allyship, especially in today's world, you know, as things have evolved post-pandemic? What in your eyes, and I'd love to hear from you too, Kate, like, can organizations be doing every day to help promote inclusion, equity, and especially fair pay?
Some of the companies that I've had the great honor to speak to, their people, like corporations and bankers, they have told their salaried people or their managers that they will be number one with their product or service, and they'll do it by inclusion with everybody, that being every minority, every female, every male there. And one I went to in New York told them, said, look around the room. That person beside you may be your best working partner in the future. We're not in a liking position. We're in a working position. So a lot of the corporations have done that. Salesforce, you know, evaluate their people and give the raises and try to keep people equitable in the company. And some other companies have done similar things. But until we get the respect of the women and the minorities, and the African-American women have it harder than a lot of us white women. But the Me Too helped a lot when that came out. And the sexual harassment cases, that brought a lot to the forefront. But the equal pay, I think people understand better than anything, because it's there. If you're not getting equal pay, you can prove it. It's there.
And in terms of some tactical elements, you know, that I think will be beneficial for our listeners and for our futures female community, can you share some key strategies that you may have acquired or have seen successful when it comes to negotiating salaries and promotions in the workplace?
The young college people, I tell them, research, know the employer you're seeking a job from, know what the pay is in that community or that job and that history. Also, once they get a job, I encourage women to get them a mentorship with some individual that they seek out, or maybe notice them and their work history and help them and assist them. But I said, make sure that you really know you can trust them. But when you get your mentorship, that's what saved my job. That was 20 years at Goodyear. I wouldn't have survived without those mentorships that I had. And they were great because they knew that Goodyear needed women. They needed women in good positions to make the company go. And another thing, a lot of the colleges today, especially the major ones, they have programs to train women in leadership. And in some of the colleges, in fact, Auburn University in Alabama a few years ago, and I was participating in that one, they had the men coming into theirs. It was just a leadership because the jury, those 5 men and 2 women, those 2 women did not want to give me a dime. They did not want to find in my favor. The 2 women, there was one older and one younger. I was so shocked when the foreman told my lawyer that story. I could not believe it.
To build on the mentorship and how important that is to women, both those in positions who can be a mentor and for girls seeking mentorship, one of the campaign partners is this company, ETRA. It means to be. And they just launched an incredible study about where girls are and where their confidence drops and why. And the results were absolutely astonishing. But What was really amazing about the study too was the effects of mentorship on girls and how positive it is and what a difference it makes. Mm-hmm. So I do employ anybody listening to this to check out ETRA if you're looking for an opportunity to give back. They're a wonderful institution set up to support and help women. And it is important. You know, I am lucky to say Lily is my mentor. How lucky is that statement to make, to be able to pick up the phone and call her, you know, and get advice from one of the most tenacious, determined women in American history. That's not lost on me. And it's had an incredible influence on my career, where I am, how I view the world, and my wanting to make this world a better place for the next generation. So thank you, Lily, for being a mentor to me. I pinch myself being able to say that.
Thank you, because that's what I hope to be. And that, you know, that's my slogan. I want them to say at my funeral that I made a difference, because like I said, this case, the Ledbetter case, just opened up the whole country. I mean, that's really how I got invited to the Democratic Convention in 08 in Denver, because I was invited and told not to endorse Obama because I needed to stay neutral to get more support for the Ledbetter bill. But I just got so fired up seeing that audience and hearing the people shout and talk and the questions fired back at me. I knew that I had to get on his campaign then, because that's when I did step out, because that's when they told me the nonpartisan groups couldn't help me anymore. But on faith, I had to stand out because I knew Obama had said that it was important. He had spoke up for the Ledbetter bill, so had Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton at the time, but Senator John McCain had said that we women needed more education, more training, then we'd get equal pay. And I knew that was not right. But when I went from office to office telling my story and talking about why we needed it, a lot of those young men, assistants to the senators or the Congress people, they'd have tears run down their cheeks and they'd talk about their mother working two jobs to send them to law school and why their mothers deserved equal pay and should not have had to work like that. Should have been able to get the rightful pay with one job. For 6 years of my life, I worked two full-time jobs. 9 months a year, I had two full-time jobs for 6 years. So I know exactly what the people are going through, and that's not right.
What's really inspiring is the way that you're thinking beyond women. You said then women and minorities, you're looking to who are the people who need equality right now, which I think is a way that this is always relevant and modern. But Kate, perhaps you could let us know what's important for this audience. Our audience is a creative audience, creative companies. What do they need to know and take away from this story?
It's funny, I pulled this napkin from an FQ event, another partner of ours, Female Quotient. We love what they're doing over there. But what if more leaders had the courage to do something positive with their power? We in this advertising industry are the storytellers. We are the ones who are designing what we're responding to culture, from Super Bowl ads to what we see on the television. We are the ones who are telling these stories. We need to tell more women's stories. We need to tell about the Lilly Ledbetters. And I will say, being on the production side of this film as a producer, it was an exceptionally difficult task for us to fundraise for this film. We were not underwritten by a major studio. We were not gifted, you know, a lump sum of money to make a beautiful film. We had to bootstrap efforts to make this film. And, you know, a lot of it relied on actually philanthropic contributions. So over $5 million that went towards the budget of this film came from individuals wanting to make a difference and leaving a lasting legacy through an investment into telling Lily's story. That's remarkable. You know, so I would say for those interested in learning more about this campaign and how they can be a part of it and how they can help in terms of creating a cultural conversation and a proactive solution-oriented campaign to galvanize us to come together, reach out. I'm available. I want to talk. And we are talking to incredible partners. And again, we're very hopeful about the future. But, you know, we are the storytellers. Let's make a concentrated effort to tell more stories about women, by women, directed by women, produced by women, all of these things, we need more space in a very male-dominated landscape.
True. You know, the corporate people and top, very top managers, CEOs and presidents of corporations, they usually, if I get to speak with them, they tell me that this is a myth. And I said, no, I challenge you to, if I'm in a room, I said, pick any three women you want in this room, find out what their salaries are, and then pick a male and see how they stack up. And there won't be a one of those women making what the male is making. I can guarantee you, it's just not the way it is. It hasn't achieved that today. And that's the flack that I get when I go to speak to groups. They tell me, they said, well, look, you passed that bill 15 years ago. I said, that bill was to open the courtroom door so people could get their equal pay that they were not paid. We had a lot of flack. We had a lot of opposition that corporations opposed it. And that's one of the things the film shows. The National Chamber of Commerce has sent their lawyer in to argue against Lilly Ledbetter in the hearings. And that was part of the problem, because they like to keep the wages low, thinking that they can get more people employed. We're better today. We have more people working. We have more people making better money. But we're still not where we need to be.
What an honor it's been to have you both on our podcast and on this episode. And you were both such an inspiration. Lily, your story, as you say, it's not still not where it needs to be, and we're not done, but it is a remarkable and amazing story. And again, thank you.
Thank you. People can't keep saying, no, it's a myth. It's not real. It is a myth. It is not a myth. It's real. And it's life every day. And that's what I like. I will be starting in May on a documentary film with Freda Mock. So least we'll have that too to leave. I wanted the film. I'm so proud of the movie. I have seen it. I do like it. It's pointed out, and with the inserts in it, it will help audiences to know. They'll be saying, I need to make sure. And what happened with the Ledbetter case, I traveled all across this country talking about the bill and trying to get it passed and educate people. And a lot of people said, oh, I'm happy I'm working for the government. I know I'm making what my male counterparts. And I said, no, you better check. And sure enough, I got a feedback from a medical research group. The lady was making $20,000 less than the males.
Yeah, and to build on Lily's legacy, we just recently celebrated the 15th anniversary of the bill, showing how much time has passed, but how much more we have to go. But it was amazing to see Lily's legacy continue through the Biden administration, making active efforts for pay transparency within government regulations. So to continue that legacy on is something that we're excited to build upon, but to also know that there are people intent in positions of power in making the world a better place. So it was wonderful to see that happen. And, you know, we're in it. We're ready. Let's go, ladies. Let's go, gentlemen. Let's make a change.
Well, on that note, thank you on behalf of Ruth and I and the full Advertising League team, and Richard, our podcast extraordinaire behind the scenes. As I said, we are so honored to have you both join us and to help tell this inspiring story, especially during Women's History Month.
And we'll be hosting an amazing event for Equal Pay Day to start things off. And there's much more opportunities where that's concerned.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with a colleague and leaving us a review on your preferred podcast platform. We'll see you again in the next episode.